Welcome to the Ages of Rock podcast with your hosts, Bill Algy, Dennis Talbot, and Alan Tate. We are three guys who have one thing in common, a love of rock and roll. Our goal is to talk about all things rock. We hope you find this show intriguing, funny, and occasionally highly opinionated. Enjoy.
Welcome to the Ages of Rock podcast. This is episode 236. 36. There you go, Alan. So anyway, we do have a guest tonight. We have Roger Collier from the Evansville Philharmonic Orchestra. He is our new conductor, and he's a really nice guy, and it's going to be fun talking to him. Before that, real quick, like this week is the last of October. Today is actually what, the October the, where are we at tonight?
27th.
Well, I think it was October 30th or 29th. We released our first show 5 years ago. So we're on basically our fifth year starting this week. So good
He's
Lord.
He's a math whiz.
I know. Well, somebody said last week that I wasn't that good with math, but I'm a little jaundiced this week too, if you're watching.
You are. You know, I actually watched the first episode just a few minutes ago.
We've changed a little bit, haven't we?
Yeah. Like, okay, a couple things I noticed. Alan has more hair. It's just on his chin.
It's just on his face.
All right. And we were all a lot thinner then.
We were thinner for sure.
We were
very unprofessional.
Well, I don't know.
We are still very unprofessional.
I don't think we were any less unprofessional than we are today. Actually, we have got a lot more comfortable in our skin.
We were very nervous. We were very nervous back then. I thought because we talked real fast and hey. Because we
some of us do
and
that
that's any
still.
Different how.
Well. The flow is a lot better now. How's that? I think I've watched a few of the old ones, but
yeah, I noticed a couple other things too.
What's that?
So in the first episode, Dennis, you brought up the fact that you borrowed two records from me in 1980 something.
Really?
You did, you horse's ass. The first one was The Elder, which you gave back to me, which I probably wouldn't have gave a crap if you kept.
That's true.
And the one you didn't give back was Judas Priest, Unleashed in the East, and you kept it. Like, you've kept it for a long, like 30 years, dude.
I didn't know I had it. I actually lost it. I didn't know I had it. So there you go.
I know. I'm just busting on you. It was funny. Anyway. You brought that up. I'm like, what? Wait a minute. He even knew he had it. Yeah. I don't know. You know, you may not have known that you actually had it at that point, but it was kind of funny.
I remember having it, but then, like I said, it got put away in one of the moves, and it just kind of got lost at that point. So.
Yeah, it was. I just thought it was very funny. Interesting.
I'm like, I hadn't listened to it, though. That's the whole thing. It's been sitting. Quite. Just
wait a minute.
That is
he
funny.
He actually stole two of them and gave the bad one back. Check in. Okay.
Anyway. I actually would have liked to cut the Elder, so. So there you go. But anyway,
I'd have to have it just to put it in my collection. Otherwise,
yeah. But anyway, it's been 5 long years. Isn't that crazy? We've had a lot of cool guests and a lot of talking and
ironically, the other thing I noticed on that show was the griping about the Kiss set list started on the first show.
And it hasn't ended.
It hasn't changed a bit. Those are a couple of observations I made. I thought you'd think it was funny. And
as much as things change, a lot of things stay the same.
You something know like saying? That, man. It was kind of funny. I was that watching it funny. And I'm like, yeah, it was interesting. And then eventually I had to turn it off. I'm like, these three guys are just, yeah, can't do it anymore.
I watched it a while back. And
I watched all but like the last minute and a half or something like that. Cause
that's probably when we got funny.
Not really. It was way too serious. When I was watching it was way too serious. It needed to be way, way too serious. We did take pot shots at you though on the first episode, which I thought was a great way to start.
Oh, yeah. I believe the word you're looking for is apropos.
Apropos.
All right. Billy, did you get any vinyl this week?
Well, before we do vinyl, let me just do a quick bit of music news. Earlier this week, Jerry Jeff Walker, writer of Mr. Bojangles, died at age 78.
I saw that.
Yep. And on to album acquisitions.
Oh, well, that was quick. Any other music news, though? Nothing?
Something not for me.
AC/DC's gearing up for that new record, yeah, man. I'm getting emails like there's like, and
I saw the video
stuff like crazy.
They got a CD comes out that's got like a box that's got some, I guess they got batteries in it. It's got like a fluorescent looking thing. It's kind of going to be expensive, I'm sure. They did show a picture of him, Brian Johnson and Angus looking at the box of the it's a little commercial. Man, Angus is looking not as young as he used to. He's looking very
so old. Is Angus not so young?
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, yeah.
But I did Angus. Watch the video. It's
I used to be.
It's a good song. I mean, it's a solid AC/DC song. It's just weird seeing their nephew playing and, you know, and taking the position of Malcolm, still playing his guitar, that hollow body guitar that Malcolm's so famous for.
You want a good old AC/DC song sometimes.
Yeah.
Like Rock or Bust. I like that record. I have that record. So I like that one. That was the last one they did. So yeah, it'd be good to hear a new record.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to it. All right.
All right. What do you got, man? Pull them up.
All right.
How many you got? You got a stack this time? No, or you just got like
not
four?
Not too many. I got about six. So I got,
I gotta get your, kind of credit.
Oh wait, I got Vandenberg.
I have that. Yeah.
Self-titled.
It's got that great sticker on the front too.
Yeah, I know, right in the middle. I haven't messed with it yet, so I've got that. That was one that I picked up. He was really low on records this week, but I did pick up. I've picked this up, Progressions of Power, Triumph. I've picked this up a few times. Went ahead and got it. You know, it's $5, so what the heck.
I like Triumph.
I went to a new record store this week, Secret Headquarters. It's a gaming and stuff place, and they got like a little arcade. It's in North Park. But they got records, and I did pick up, they got a lot of import stuff, but for $13, I got Accept Metal Heart.
Oh.
In real good shape, and I was pretty happy to get that for that price. And I also got a copy of Def Leppard's first album, On Through the Night. Got that for $15.
Really good shape. You got some cool stickers on there. I mean, they got it's
plastic.
I got that part, dude.
Basically says vinyl destination. It puts a price and it has grades if he wants to put.
Oh, it has grades on there. Oh, that's cool.
If he wants to put on there, he put on some. He's got some really good stuff. He did on the other ones, all VG Plus, what he said. Okay, and I did get two new ones. I did get my Kiss 45th anniversary on the splatter, and it's kind of an ugly orangey looking, and even look even more orange. I'm not gonna pull them out because they're a pain in the ass to get out. These damn bit records are, but it's nice to get a new, you know, it's got a new booklet with it. I haven't took the whole thing out. Kind of interesting that on the back though, it's got a little bit different writing. You know, direction, management, McGee Entertainment, Doc McGee. That's not on the original one, so so it's been changed a little bit. But anyway, I haven't listened to it yet. I'm going to try to. I did get this today. I got U2-4. And it's on 180 gram. It's got a little booklet in it. It's thick. Like, this thing's like, I thought it was a double record, but it's got a great big booklet. I haven't looked at it yet. Really nice, heavy plastic with a little lid thing here on it. But, so anyway, I got that. That's about the only thing I like from U2, I like the very early stuff. So I got that. I'm kind of happy to get it done. He had an import version of that for $29, and I used, and I got that new Amazon for $21, I think. So
can't beat that with a stick.
That's all I got.
I have two things coming. One should arrive by the 30th, which is Friday, and the other one should arrive. It's a pre-ordered two. I got two other things coming too.
Right.
They should arrive around the same time in mid-November. Cool. So we'll see what happens.
Oh, and I did get Steve and I, like I said, we swapped. We talked about that last week. We swapped the second. I got my gold CD. So I wanted to listen to She, and I put it on. And guess what? It's a 33 or a 45. I had to switch speeds. I hate that.
I've never got a record like that.
The two Foo Fighters that I have are like that. They're double albums and they're on the.
I've never got a record like that. I don't know. Maybe I just been lucky that I didn't get anyone.
Yeah, but. I don't like them. They're painting ass. My, like I said, my turntable is one of those turn ones and has the belt drive on the outside of the disc. And you have to actually swap pulleys with the belt, and the belt just barely hangs on the way it is. And it's when it comes off, it's a.
I'm you have to change the pulley whenever you, because it's a 45?
45 to 33.
Yes. Yeah, that's a not going to happen ever.
It sucks. No, that. Not change the pulley. The pulley, it's got two pulleys, and you just change where the rubber band, the band.
Yeah, I'm going to change the button on the front of mine and go 30. Yeah, I ain't changing shit. But, I'm going to put the little disc thing in there for the 45s, but I'm
not putting it. It's got the small hole, but it's just, it's on 45. So I don't know what, I don't know if they sound any better or not. I think it's kind of a pain in the butt. So anyway,
All right. That all we got.
I think
that seems kind of lame for like our 5-year anniversary. Hey, happy anniversary, fellas.
Yeah,
got you on my mind.
Yeah.
I was getting ready to say that. Oh, please don't.
No, there we go. No, we'll have to do a show. We'll have to do a wrap-up, 5-year wrap-up show or some point.
We say that every year. Every year we say we need to do a year in wrap-up, and then we go. Next year we'll do a year in wrap-up.
Maybe we'll do a 6-year wrap-up.
Who knows, man?
So,
All right.
So let's bring on Mr. Roger Collia.
All right. So we are very happy to have Roger Collia with us tonight. He is the newest, and hopefully for going to be here for a long time, conductor for the Evansville Philharmonic Orchestra. And from this point on, we will call that the EPO. It's just a lot easier to say. Roger, great to see you tonight.
Yeah, it's great to be here. Thanks for having me, guys.
Not a problem. Like I said, you were actually, we had I was doing a little research tonight, and just for giggles here, the Evansville Philharmonic Orchestra was founded in 1934.
That's right.
It was approximately 80 musicians conducted by, and Alfred Salvia has been with the thing, what was it, 31 years, I believe?
Yes.
Before him?
He just retired after 31 years, which is sort of unprecedented with
music directors.
So it's a really big shoes to fill, as I always say. And, you know, he did a lot of great work for that organization, really elevating the EPO to a national level. So, you know, and I've met Alfred. We had a wonderful coffee when I got into town a few months ago, and he's been really, just really welcoming. So that's nice.
And like I said, whenever we started going to the Philharmonic probably a couple years ago. We have friends of ours that's and some of them are in the board, and brought us into whenever they were out of town and they couldn't use their tickets. They would say, "Hey, would you like to go to the Philharmonic?" And it's like we started going and really, really enjoying it. And so when Alfred was leaving, they had an open position, and there was two. They did basically a nationwide call, and they said, you know, everybody put in what you can. They had over 250 people all over the world put in for this position as conductor, and they narrowed it down through. And maybe you can talk about this process or so, but they got it down to five. They ended up getting down to five. Now, I was able to see, I didn't see the first two, but I saw the last three. Mm-hmm. I saw, there was a guy from Grand, I can't remember his name, from Grand Junction. Actually, he's a friend of yours, I believe.
That's right, yeah.
There was a lady that was in there, one of the two, they had two women and three men that tried out for this. And then Roger was the last person to come in. Now, I'll tell you right now, like I said, we went to all three, like I said, the last three, and it's a really funny story because we were sitting with the board. Actually, she is the president of the Philharmonic now. But we were sitting there, and Kelly and I were watching, and we saw the, like I said, two of the four at first, and then we saw Roger as the fifth person. And I remember going about midway through, I looked at my wife, and she looked at me at the same time, and we go, "That's the guy." That's the guy. Oh, and it was the hair flip because you had this, you had that longer hair and you were doing your conducting and you did this like kind of hair flip, kind of a rock kind of move. And I'm like going, that's the guy.
I always say conductor hair is a thing. So,
but you had more, I mean, of the other ones that I saw and of other conductors that I've seen, you just got charisma. You got that. You got that thing. You get into it, and you're like,
thank you. Yeah,
it's very, and you make it interesting. You actually want to watch you, and then watch who you're pointing to, and then watch what you're doing at that point. But anyway, yeah. So the whole point was real quick, and then I'll stop talking. So when we got done with that, we went to you had an after party at the Sauced restaurant that night. And I remember meeting some of the other board members, and I even told every one of those, I said, if this guy gets in, I'm buying season tickets.
Oh, wow.
And so our friend who we bought to, she knew way in advance who had actually won. She never said a word. We didn't know until it was actually announced. She was very good about keeping it secret.
But I couldn't tell anyone either. That was the hardest part. Only my wife and my parents.
Wow. So anyway, whenever it was announced, she was like going, yeah, you're going to have to get, and like going, I will be glad to get tickets. So we bought tickets, and we've been to, and we'll talk about this because something happened between the point that you got in and the time that you started taking over.
Let's see.
And it was COVID.
Oh, yeah. What could that be?
2020 came in on us.
So. Yes.
But anyway, let's talk about coming into it whenever you first came in and you tried out.
Well, thanks for that beautiful introduction. You know, it's such an honor to be the next music director of the EPO. It is a cutthroat process. I mean, really, it's grueling. I mean, there were a number so just to give you a sense of the timeline, this search started 2 years ago. Before I was announced. So they put the job posting out there, and then they basically asked us to submit a number of different materials, resume, video of our conducting, reference letters, all these different documents. And then they narrowed it down from 250 to perhaps maybe 40 or so. And then what they did was they did a Zoom interview session. And we all had to speak with a committee of, I think there were 12 people. It was musicians, board members, community members. And it was pretty intense. I mean, everyone was really nice, but it was about a 1 hour interview, maybe 45 minutes on Zoom. And you know, Zoom is always a little, you never know what you're gonna get because the Wi-Fi connection may be choppy. And unfortunately, I think at times my Wi-Fi was a little choppy and I was really disappointed. At first I thought, oh no, it's over. You know, they can't understand me because of the Wi-Fi. So that was distracting, but it went well enough where I found out that I was a finalist. And the great thing about Evansville is, you know, I did my doctorate at Indiana University. So that was in 2009, I started my doctorate in conducting. So I already knew about the Evansville Philharmonic even before I applied for the job. You know, I have a lot of friends who play in the orchestra, you know, string players, wind players. They have told me over the years that this is a fantastic orchestra with a lot of talent. And that was one of the major reasons why I applied for this job, was because the musicians play at such a high level. But unfortunately, I never made the trip down to Evansville when I was in school. I didn't know much about the community. So the first time I was in Evansville was during my week with the orchestra, where I got to meet different people from the community. It's almost like being a politician. You have to go on the radio, you're on TV, you're meeting with the board, you're meeting with the Rotary Club, you're meeting with everyone. So it's a very grueling, intense process. But what I found was that everyone was so welcoming. And that, I mean, I have to say, the Hoosier State in general, I think this is, everyone's been always very nice. And even when I started in Bloomington, it was just like, people are so welcoming and nice around here. At least that's what I've noticed. And it was no different in Evansville. So it was an intense process, but I tell you, the moment I stepped in front of the orchestra, I knew it was going to be a good week. It's like, sometimes you don't know what you're going to get. You could prepare and prepare all you want musically, but if the orchestra isn't committed, or you know, they start judging you right from the start. Like, you're walking onto the podium and they're already judging you. So you have to really focus on the music and just be yourself. So I was myself, and I felt a great connection with this orchestra. And it was some of the most exciting concerts I ever conducted. Maybe that's why I did the hair flip, because it was such exciting music to be a part of. And the level and the amount of artistry that was made that evening in the concert was truly memorable. And I have to say, when I got the call 2 days later, You know, that's the good thing about going last. You find out quicker. So the fact that I found out 2 days later was all the better. And I was, I said right away to Kirsten when she called, I said, yes, I will. I want this job. I want to work with this community. I want to meet as many people as I possibly can. And sure enough, as you mentioned, and then COVID happened. But I mean, before we get to that, I just have to say that it was a very intense process. The music director searches are unlike anything else, and you really have to be prepared to meet as many different people as you can and just really bring as much enthusiasm as you possibly can. And for me, everyone was really nice, welcoming, and I learned so much about the history of Evansville during my time there, and it's really influenced my programming this season, and I'm very, very grateful to have this position.
It's funny because now that I know that you knew 2 days after your show, she kept it a secret that long.
Yeah, I had to keep it.
People have talks.
I had to keep it a secret for about a month because then we went, you know, the announcement was on Zoom. Right. And that was a whole other experience, you know, because of COVID and the pandemic, we had to do this announcement on Zoom. It had to be virtual. It couldn't be in person.
Because I'm trying to remember, your last show was the last show that they ever had that was full concert. And that was because I know Alfred was supposed to do his final goodbye concert, which got canceled. When was that? When was that show that you did?
It was the end of February. I think it was February 29th, maybe, or 28th. I forget the exact date, but it was the very end of February.
Because we were in Napa. We actually went out there and came. Yeah. It was either right before Napa or right after Napa when that happened. Because I remember that's when everything just went. I mean, just everything just went.
Everything got shut down.
Put the brakes on that part. But the thing is that I like about what you guys are doing right now, and we'll get into that part, is the fact that most of the Philharmonics around are basically now doing nothing.
Right, right.
They're all sitting around. And it's like most of the bands. So you've had now how many concerts now?
We've had, 10 concerts so far. 10 right. concerts, 4 different series, 2 classic series and 2 pops series. Right. And, a lot, just the other day, the Los Angeles Philharmonic announced they're shutting down for the entire season. You know, New York Philharmonic, they've shut down. The Nashville Symphony, lots of big orchestras and small orchestras are not doing anything this season. So the fact that we're able to make music during a pandemic truly shows that this organization believes in live music and really connecting with the community. You know, we have all these safety protocols in place. We have to play with masks on. I have to conduct with a mask on. We are spaced out 6 feet to 12 feet apart. There's only 250 people allowed total in the concert hall, which is the Victory Theater. It's a 2,000 seat hall. And all of these things, you might think it sounds really difficult, and it is difficult, but the joy of making music and being back on stage overcomes those obstacles. You overcome those obstacles. And I have to say, I mean, you've been to a few of our concerts and
been to all of them, actually.
I think we've been able to make it work.
I mean, you've got plastic bags over the horns. You've got people behind shower curtains. It's a different experience. And I even told, after we got done the other night, and that was a really good one. You guys did the Roaring Twenties. And I even like that you did a little, the Handy.
Yes,
blues
yes,
type of yes. And like you needed some burlesque girls on stage for that song. It had a little bit of that.
I said we needed a midnight show, Dennis. I said we needed to do a midnight show with moonshine in the back. That's a moonshine for everyone, and it's a party, That was such a fun concert to do.
But I told him as we were walking out, I said, I can't wait to the point where we can actually have a full orchestra. Because one of the last shows we saw down there before you came in was the fact of, they had a whole chorus behind the orchestra in there. And I miss that. Now, what we're getting now, though, but we're getting live music. And that's what's so nice. And like I said, you guys are taking it. You're creating, like when you went out to the World War II Museum, where you've got an airport hangar where you can open the doors, get more people in, or get people outside. I mean,
I'd say we're being really creative. We're taking the orchestra out into the community, not just the Victory Theater. Right. We're not just performing there, but like you said, we're discovering new venues. Just the other day, I was touring Bossy Field, the baseball stadium, and I learned about the history and the fact that, you know, A League of Their Own was filmed there. I think that's such a vital part of the community. Why not do a concert there in the spring, you know, when the weather is good? Or Friedman Park. I mean, there's some great venues in Evansville and Newburgh and in the tri-state area in general where we need to be performing in. And the World War II Museum, I mean, Evansville has such history when it comes to World War II. And that was a really special occasion to see so many veterans in the audience. And we were performing big band music. And that's what I love about this orchestra, is they don't just play classical music. It's not just Mozart. It's not just Beethoven. But it's the music of Glenn Miller, you know, Duke Ellington, W.C. Handy, the blues, ragtime, jazz, you name it. This orchestra can do it. And that's a really exciting thing for me as a conductor, because I can program all sorts of different types of music. And I have so many crazy ideas that I would love to try with this orchestra, because I think people would really enjoy it. And real quick, I just wanted to mention that our opening concert, you know, you mentioned the spacing, and I want everyone listening to know we did a really cool thing where we commissioned a piece about Evansville. It was about the city of Evansville, and it celebrated the EPO, where we had our brass players in the balcony of the Victory while our strings were on the stage of the Victory. So it was this kind of call and response, antiphonal type of effect. And I think it was really neat to be in the audience, because you heard it coming, that you heard the sound coming behind you and in front of you and at you. So that was really special and something unique and different.
I was three seats away from the lady who plays tuba.
It's loud. I know.
And it's loud. She's behind the curtain, and I was actually behind her, and it was like going. But I mean, it was like, I told Kelly, I was like, oh, this is going to just blast us. But it, you know what? It really worked, though. It actually worked, and it wasn't that bad. I mean, it was kind of. It is.
Well, and you know, we planned on doing that even before the pandemic, this call and response. And I said it's the perfect pandemic piece, because everyone's spaced out. You know, the winds and brass are really far from the strings, so the string players don't have to worry about aerosols or anything in there. And right. It worked really well. And it was a challenge to put together, don't get me wrong, but I was listening to the recording, and I'm so proud of the orchestra for doing it. And they did a great job.
So we've had some discussions, and like I said, we've had dinner, and we talked about some stuff. So you get a little bit of rock and roll background.
That's right.
Talk a little bit about that when you're playing in high school and college. Yeah.
I'm happy to talk about it. So, you know, I started off on the trumpet. I was a trumpet player for my entire career, really. I studied trumpet in college, and I started in the band in fourth grade. I was in the jazz band, the marching band in high school, you name it. But along the way of my musical training, I picked up the drums. I picked up the drum set. And as a drummer, I remember going to Guitar Center with my parents and picking up a drum set when I was in middle school. And sure enough, I learned on my own how to play the drum set. I always enjoyed, during that time in middle school, I wasn't listening to classical music. You know, my parents aren't musicians and they listen to all sorts of music, but we didn't listen to classical music really. We listened to a lot of pop, rock and roll. And growing up, I listened to a lot of rock. So my first CD was Metallica. I mean, it was, the album with the song One on it. Was it Metallica, I think?
That's Injustice for All.
Justice for All. Yes, that was the one. It was a CD, I believe, or I don't think it was a cassette, but I think it was a CD. And I loved it. You know, I loved it as a drummer, and I wanted to play like Lars Ulrich, you know, a bit with the double bass drum pedals.
You need to set your expectations a little bit higher, though.
Anyway. maybe. But, you know, along the way, though, we started our own band, and we used to play at a club in, I grew up in New York, so it was a town, Manhasset, New York. It was about 30 minutes from New York City, so we used to play at a club in Queens, Bayside, Queens, called the Voodoo Lounge, and the Voodoo Lounge was a rock and roll club. You know, you had a lot of heavy metal groups that played there. And at the time, we were just a bunch of high school kids. You know, there were four of us. And I describe our style as, you know, the band, not Metallica so much, but it was more like alternative rock. So the band Korn meets Limp Bizkit meets the Deftones, this kind of sound. And we thought, you know, it was, as a kid in high school, I thought I was the coolest kid in town. You know, we were playing in front of like these older rockers and, you know, here we are just doing our thing. And I thought we sounded pretty good. We got invited back to play there about five or six times during my high school career. The band, I played in the band until about my junior year of high school, maybe sophomore year. It might've been ninth and 10th grade. I forget exactly. But anyway, my background is in a variety of different music. You know, you think conductor, a lot of people think, oh, we just listen to Bach and Mozart. I grew up, actually, the first CD I ever heard or the first recording I ever heard was Louis Armstrong. My grandpa loved the music of Louis Armstrong. And then from that, I started listening to rock and roll and, you know, pop music. And then along the way, when I started playing the trumpet more, I discovered the orchestral repertoire, which was really in high school when I joined the youth orchestra. So for me as a conductor now, fast forward, you know, 20 years, I have always made it a goal to combine different genres of music. So not just the music of Mozart on a program, but why don't we play the music of Queen with Mozart on the program, for instance? You know, why not do Led Zeppelin and do a Beethoven symphony? I mean, these are all the types of things I'm thinking about because I love both forms of music. And I know we could create and attract new audiences if we do this type of diverse programming. And about 3 years ago, or it was 2.5 years ago in Orange County, California, I was working as the associate conductor of the Pacific Symphony. I conducted a concert called From Classical to Rock. And what a thrill this was, guys. I mean, we invited Johnny Resnick from the Goo Goo Dolls, Randy Jackson, Nancy Wilson from Heart, Martin Anderson from Steelheart. And we did a concert with a full symphony orchestra and the rockers, I'll call them, in front of the orchestra. We had arrangements specifically made. So Stairway to Heaven, Cashmere, Bohemian Rhapsody, with the orchestra backing them up. And we also did a few pieces where it was just a classical mishmash. So Beethoven's Fifth Symphony with rock and roll. So it was a medley of Beethoven 5, The Rite of Spring by Igor Stravinsky, Holst's The Planets. And it was a really fascinating experience because the rockers, they were amazing. They didn't read music though. So I remember rehearsing some spots in this production, and I would say measure 35, and they said, you know, Roger, we have no idea where that is. So we had to explain, oh, it's the head, it's the riff. It was really interesting. And it was just a great experience. And I would love to bring this sort of thing to Evansville in the future. Yeah. So,
You and I have talked about that on a small terms, but that's one thing I do like about even when we have when they have the gala down there, you know, they included three or four different bands playing, playing outside, playing. And that's what I think I like about what you're doing. And I told Kelly when we saw you for the first time, I said, this is the kind of thing that they need for the Philharmonic, because, you know, he's a great conductor, but he's got good ideas to bring the younger people in to make it cool. The thing is, you're going to make the Philharmonic cool.
Well, you know what
I think it'll work out.
I appreciate that. And, you know, I think what we're doing now is really cool. As you mentioned, we're featuring different acts from the community. You know, we had Monty Skelton play some funk at the gala. We had Calabash play some rock and roll. We had jazz artists play Tom Drury on piano. These are well-known names in the community, and they deserve to be heard. Why aren't they heard more? I thought that giving them the opportunity to play on our gala in front of our donors, in front of our board members, would be a great way to incorporate them for future concerts, for example. Maybe this can ease the way into the EPO family, for instance. And you know what we're doing, guys, is we're also doing pre-concert entertainment for each concert this season. We're not just doing the main concert, but we're opening the concert with a set by an outside artist. So for Pops 2, our Rat Time show, we had our principal percussionist, Ross Erickson playing some Scott Joplin rags outdoors right in front of the entrance. And we're also inviting people from the community on stage with me. And we have a short conversation about Evansville, about the music scene, about the orchestra. And it's a great way to really make it about Evansville and not just let's play a Beethoven symphony. It's a great way to really incorporate community. And this season is called Connect and Celebrate. So that's a big part of it. We're connecting and celebrating with this community.
So now you need to use your powers to be, to get Mester rebuilt and open again. Because you never experienced Mester, but we all have. And that place needs to be reopened, redone, whatever it takes. Right, Bill? Alan?
Yep.
It's going to take a lot of money.
Well, you know
what?
It's
going to be the challenge.
The thing
it's
about
take $5. Well, it's going to be a lot of money.
The problem with Mester is they keep talking about, well, they were talking about it before. It's like, well, it's going to take this. It's going to take an extra $7 million because they want to put in these corporate boxes and corporate things. Mm-hmm. No. Why don't you make it? Why don't you rebuild it just like it was back in the 50s and the 40s? Make it that simple. We don't need fancy boxes. We don't need this. We just need to rebuild
the electricity.
Well, you need to rebuild the stage, the dressing rooms, yes. That area there. Leave the seat. I mean, leave it as simple as possible. People want to go be able to sit in the lawn. People want to sit on a blanket. People want to be able to listen. The best concerts I ever saw. I mean, I saw Kiss, Iron Maiden. Yeah. I mean, I saw Doobie Brothers. It was the last concert I saw there was Doobie Brothers. saw all these people out there. And it was like going, oh, just we need it. Evansville needs an outdoor amphitheater, and we have it. It just has to be fixed. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I just really wish they would get on it. So
yeah, you know, that brings me back to going out into the community. I run a music festival in upstate New York. It's in Lake George, New York. It's a beautiful part of the country. It's in the Adirondack Mountains. I don't know if you've heard of it. It's about an hour north of Albany. But every year, every summer, we do a festival, a classical music festival. But all of our venues are spread out throughout the entire city. We don't have one home venue. We play in breweries. We play in bars. We play in hotel rooftops, amphitheaters like you're describing. It's a beautiful amphitheater that we play in, and it overlooks the lake. And you know what's great about this is people are walking by on the boardwalk and they hear music, and before you know it, you have 2,000 people watching. And it's a great way to bring in new audience members. So I think in Evansville, if we could do something similar and play in a big outdoor venue, I remember there was talk about playing in Garvin Park, for example. Getting people who are in the area and all of a sudden they hear music, you'll have a big audience. People will listen and they'll learn more about the EPO. But I find that a lot of my experience has been working for different organizations, listening, coming up with all these different ideas. And now I'd love to try some of these ideas here in Evansville because there's so much potential to do really great concerts in the community and all types of music. Like you mentioned, you know, I grew up going to rock concerts too. I went to Metallica. I saw Rage Against the Machine. I saw the Who at Madison Square Garden. I mean, when I was in college, that was an awesome show. And all of these shows have given me ideas as a conductor as to how I want to approach
right.
the concert experience. I want the audience to enjoy. I want to see that energy. I don't want the audience necessarily to be silent the whole time. Why not applaud in between movements? And I know that's a controversial subject, a controversial topic to talk about, but I am all for that. We as musicians appreciate that. We love that applause. And if there's somewhere, you know, taking selfies during a concert, I encourage that. I encourage you to take your phone out and take a shot of yourself at the concert with the hashtag EPO proud.
Right.
You know, that's all great. And I hope we can do more of that moving forward.
That's funny because I'm like that because I'm very new to going to these concerts. So I'm like going, I'm ready to start clapping. I'm like going, oh, shit, they're in between. I got to stop for a second. Really funny thing, though. It was funny. And actually, Kelly caught it, too. It was in this last concert, the Pops concert.
Yeah.
Because it was because they're fun. Those concerts are fun.
Yes.
They're not meant to be stuff, you know, stuff tied kind of thing.
Yes.
And they were, whenever they first came out, you know, they come out and they do their first tuning. It's like, Everybody's tuning. And the last thing we heard was the dude on the drum hit the cowbell. Yes. And I'm like going, he's tuning the cowbell. Yep. I'm like, Kelly looked at me and I was like, we were laughing our butts.
It was so funny. He was, and he wasn't doing that, you know, that was not serious. He was just having some fun.
We caught it. It was the funniest thing. I was sitting there and I was like going, oh my God, that's the funniest thing. I think that's it funny. Sounds good.
I was laughing backstage when I heard that, let me tell you. Well,
you noticed it too.
I noticed it. All right. I told him afterwards. I said, Todd, you were really tuning that cowbell quite seriously. he took things very seriously, but I think he was having fun. And that's what it is. You know, orchestra is meant to be fun. This is meant to be a great experience. Sure, you could get dressed up in your tails and your tuxedo. That's fine. But don't worry about how you looked. Come with an open mind. And just enjoy the experience, I always say. You know, everyone listening there wants to have a good time, and they all come in with different expectations. But if you come in with an open mind and you're open to anything, that's what we want. We want you to come away feeling moved, feeling rejuvenated with energy. And for me as a conductor and the musicians on stage, when we can feel the energy from the audience. So we always perform better when there are a lot of people in the audience. I'll tell you that much. And it's been tricky with COVID because not many people are allowed in the hall. We're still giving great performances, but man, let me tell you, when it's a full house, there is a certain electricity in the air that you just can't replicate.
No, I've been in both sides of it. I've seen when it's full and one of those performances, and then I've seen it when it's like it. But you know what? It is live performance, and we're actually getting live performance, and I'm not going to complain. And like you said, too, there are people there with suits on. There's people with ties. And I wear jeans and usually a button-up shirt. Because I don't, you know, the thing, and I hope people will start coming more. And like I said, I think younger people should start coming more because it's not stuffy. It's not, it's right. Cool. It is, and it's cool. I mean, like I said, we went up seeing The Who this last year, my wife and I both in Indianapolis up there at whatever it is. I always call it Deer Creek, but anyway, roof off or whatever they want to call it. But they played with their symphony orchestra. And go ahead. But, but anyway, no, it was actually Kelly and I both went up there with very little expectations, and we just got tickets because we wanted to see The Who for the last time, because they're probably not going to come around again. And it was probably one of the best shows I've seen in years.
They've been honest. On a good show. I was in college really, when I saw them.
And
yeah.
with the orchestra playing along with them, it was just fantastic. And, you know, a lot of bands have, you know, even behind Bill's head, Kiss, you know, they went to Australia, played with their band. You know, Metallica's done it. All these other bands have done these orchestras, you know. Yeah. We need to get Accept in Evansville to do their Symphony of Terror. That's what we need.
Hey, I'm all for it.
Hey, we know the guys. We can maybe get this to work.
Oh man, I would love
Let's
to
scare a few people.
I would love to see the expressions of certain people in the audience if you did that.
The flames are going up. It's like it's good stuff.
But you know what what's great about this pandemic in a way is that now the concerts are shorter. They're an hour in length, no intermission. And I think it's a great way to be introduced to the symphony, because a lot of the times I hear people complain, oh, it's very long. You know, there's that intermission that breaks it up, breaks the flow up. Now with the pandemic, we have to do shorter concerts, 50 minutes to 1 hour, no intermission. It's a great way, I think, to get introduced to the orchestra, because you don't have to sit there for 2.5 hours. And it's a great way to ease into the symphony, into this music, you know? And another thing is, I always talk from the podium. And that's kind of like, you know, you think about rock and roll shows. There's always that audience engagement. And that's so important, I think, for classical music, that there is audience engagement. It's not just me waving my hands around, but that I'm communicating with the audience both musically and verbally. So I always take time in between the concert or even in between pieces to talk to the audience and get to, you know, just feel the energy of the room a little bit. And that's similar to rock and roll. It's similar to pop music, you know, where the entertainment or the band is communicating with the audience. So there are a lot of different, you know, aspects I take from that experience, and I try to apply it into like a orchestral setting. You know, for the first piece, last concert, Dennis, you were there for the art and music concert. We messed with the lighting a little bit. We did some lighting effects for the first piece. That typically doesn't happen in an orchestral setting. It's just the regular lighting, bright white lights. For this, we did a concert with blue shades of blue and deep red and purple. And the reason for it was because the piece had to do with a painting. It was based on a 1925 painting, I want to say. An expressionistic painting. It was very abstract. And that's why we did these really cool lighting effects, because it went along with the music. So that was really special.
Kind of had a deep purple kind of thing to it. But you know what, though? I texted you that next day, and I said I was really interested in that. And that was actually one of my favorite concerts, that one there. Because, you know, you realize, I mean, if a person like me who's always listening to rock and all this stuff like that, you think of, okay, classical music, everything's been written, you know, hundreds of years ago.
Right, right.
You were playing pieces that were written
the last 6 years.
Yeah. And I'm like going, really? And it was like going, and it was written, the girl was 20?
How old was she? 20 or 21 years old when she wrote that piece.
And I'm like going, I'm listening to it, and I'm like going, and it just kept you on the edge of your seat. I'm like going, this is really good music. That's and it's not and it's not 500 years old. It's new.
Yeah, and Dennis, that's something I like to do. That's something I like to do on each concert, is feature a piece by a young American composer. Someone
should.
Or just a living composer, because there's so much great music being written today and during this time. I mean, you think about it, you know, Mozart was new music at one time. Beethoven was new music. Why can't we also highlight the voices, especially American composers, who are writing great music? That's so important to me. And, you know, you think about, there's so many great composers, film composers, especially John Williams. You think about him. Who's going to be the next John Williams? That's what I'm looking for. Every time I conduct, I want to program a new piece that the audience may never have heard, or that a name they've never heard of, so that this person, this composer, can be part of the standard canon someday. You know, it's important for us to champion the music of living composers.
If I'm not mistaken, one of the young men that my son went to high school with and was in band, it seems to me he composed maybe a mini orchestra or something. I'm going to have to hit him up and see if he's got it. He's in the Marines right now. So.
Oh, I know who you're talking about. You're talking about Verkinden, I think, is the name. Verkinden. Or Don for short. Yeah. He reached out to me a few months ago when I got the position. He reached out to me and said, you know, hey, Roger, I'm a composer. I'm from Evansville. Here's my music. So he's a really great composer, and I'm trying to find a way to work with him in the future. So it's so funny you mentioned that.
That is awesome. I'm so glad that he did reach out to you, because he is all around fantastic musician.
Yeah, he's in the Marines right now. I'm not sure where he's stationed, but I know that he writes a lot of music that is very similar to like film music or even cinematic, you know, music, and he's a real talent. So I'm going to be speaking with him hopefully soon about what we can do in the future.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Well, the cellist you had the other day, he just came from working on a score, wasn't it?
Yeah, he was at Box Studios, Eric Byers. He lives in LA. He plays all the different soundtracks for different composers, film composers. He's worked with John Williams many times. It's a really neat scene out there. And I lived out there for 5 years. I was in Long Beach, California.
Right.
So I got to sit in on some of those sessions. And man, it's a different world. You know, everyone has their click track, their headset with a click track on. A click track is like a metronome. It's keeping the beat. And it's to line up the music with the movie. And it's just a fascinating experience to watch and be a part of.
It's interesting, because like I said, that's why I like to get – I'm hoping more younger people will get into it, because they, you know, people think classical music, they just think of a bunch of old dead guys. That's you know what I'm saying? And I don't mean it to be disrespectful or anything to classical music, but all movies that are made today are they're new, music, they're new, yeah. they're and they're new yeah. composers composing new music. That's one thing, and it's exciting. And so people need to get into it more. And I hope that at some point in Evansville, we can, and I think you'll be the guy to be able to do that, to be, ring in and get a younger audience coming in and get people more interested in the EPO.
Yeah, well, thank you. And I would just add to that, you know, video game music is like the new film music now. You know, there's so many gamers out there, and the music is some of the most beautiful, lush music I've ever heard. In particular, my good friend, Austin Wintery, he's a video game composer. Well, he's a composer, but he composes primarily for video games. He was the first ever Grammy-nominated video game composer for the game Journey. And it's a stunning score, guys. I mean, it's lush, beautiful, emotional, and it's classical music. A lot of people don't realize that that's classical music right there. And I would love to bring Austin to Evansville and do a whole entire concert of music from video games, specifically the score to Journey. So check it out if you can. Go on YouTube, search Austin Wintery Journey. It's a really great score, and I'd love to do it here. I'll add to that, I did an entire video game concert in Los Angeles when I was living there, and it was like a rock concert. People showed up cheering. They had their shirts on of different video games, and it was just so much fun for us as musicians. It was just a blast.
All right, so one last question before you leave, and it is, this is a KISS world, and we all live in it. Are you a KISS fan? And if you're not, that's fine. It's fine.
You know, guys, I don't know much. I don't really follow KISS. I have to admit it. I know the look. I have to admit, I don't know much about KISS at all. And I don't listen to the music much. But I think I would enjoy it. I just never got into it.
I will hook you up with I tell you what, we'll make you a playlist and we'll send it to you. How's that?
Yes, please do. Please do.
Because it is funny. Because you're what, Roger? You're what, 30?
I'm 36. 36.
36. Okay. So,
yeah.
We got a few more years on you. But, see, Alan, you're not the youngest guy.
So, Gene Simmons, right? Gene Simmons.
There you go.
I should be able. It's like terrible. No songs are coming to my head, even though if I heard the song, I would know right away. Oh, that's KISS. Sorry, guys.
No. It's funny. Well, you know what? I'm gonna, even because, like I said, you're bringing classical rock to me and teaching me about classical rock. I'm gonna teach you about KISS. How's that?
Yeah. No. Seriously, I'm happy to learn. Let's do a whole session on the music of KISS. We could do a watch party. You know.
There you go.
There's like different apps now where you could watch YouTube videos together. Let's do it.
Exactly. Well, Roger, thank you so much for taking time out tonight. We sure appreciate it. And like I said, I'm looking forward to all the whole series this summer. I've got tickets for every show, so I'll be there definitely. And like I said, we'll hopefully bring a lot. And like I said, I like the fact that you're bringing and working with musicians here in town. And I think it's going to be you're going to have a long run and a long career here in Evansville.
I appreciate that. And it's been just so much fun chatting with you, and I can't wait to see all of you guys at our next concerts. And, you know, if you're listening right now, come out and check out the EPO. You know, we want you at our concerts. We want you there. I want to meet you, although it's a little difficult during a pandemic. But once again, come out, support your hometown orchestra, and we'll see you there.
Can you tell our audience how to find the EPO online?
Yeah, sure. So we have a website, evansvillephilharmonic.org, I believe is the website. If not, just Google search Evansville Philharmonic Orchestra. You know, the website will pop up, and you can find our ticket information there. You can find our phone number. And also, check out my website. I post our concert dates typically. It's rogercalia.com, and that's my homepage, my personal homepage. And we also have a Facebook page, Evansville Philharmonic Orchestra, on Facebook and on YouTube. Instagram, sorry. So check it out. And you could buy tickets through the website or by calling. So it's easy.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, anyway, I'll see you soon. And
yeah,
Alan, you want to go ahead and take us out? Tell them where you can find us.
If you find us on agentsofrock.com, past episodes are there, links to our social media. And until next time, peace out, folks.
Thanks for listening to the Ages of Rock podcast. If you haven't done so already, be sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel, like us on Facebook, and most importantly, tell all your friends. Remember, you're never too old to rock. Until the next episode, peace out, folks.